Drumroll.
We are recording Monday, February 12th, about a little after 10 a.m. in council time.
Very good. Okay. Approval of the minutes for February 5th, 2018. Motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries. Okay, we're going to move right up to WASDOT. The conversation. Take it away, ladies.
Awesome. So my name is Carly Francis. I'm the Region Planning Director for Southwest Washington, Washington State DOT. With me is Judith Perez. She's the project manager for this project. She's also in the planning section. For folks who are at RTC, you've heard this before, and I'll apologize, behind you are slides, but maybe you have copies of them so you can follow along there. So the point of this one is to make folks aware of the study that we're doing and some key criteria, and also to seek or open the door for feedback around outreach activities, both with citizens and also with boards and councils. So the first thing that I want to cover, though, also is the way that we're approaching the study, which is a little bit different from things you may have seen in the past. And the key to that is what's called practical solutions. It's an approach, and in a talking point, it's looking for the right project at the right place at the right time. The question really becomes, what does that actually mean? One, it means that we're trying to reduce the silos in which we approach and attack problems with. So bringing everybody to the table at the same time. So those good builder engineer types, the planners, traffic folks who look at smaller types of improvements, as well as working with cities and counties and other relevant folks, and having folks at the table with us also to explore what the problems are and how to address them. Beyond that, it is a context-specific type of approach, so recognizing that the state system fits within the local system, fits within the land that that surrounds that, and all of those things can be relevant. It can also be relevant to how you look at what you might do to address those problems, so that the best fix for a state system problem could be a local system solution, or not. So it's that openness to recognizing that there may be different ways to attack a problem. It's also performance-based, so that specifically means that once you identify what the problems are, you say, what does it mean to address this problem? What kind of performance are we expecting? And that you should be building up solutions such that they get to that level of performance expectation, and once you do, you stop. And what that can look like is a lower cost investment sometimes than you might otherwise anticipate. So really, every problem doesn't require an interchange as a solution. So those are kind of some key components. Again, it is looking for cost-effective solutions, so you're looking for the lowest cost and effective way to resolve the issue that you see. I mentioned already the sort of interdisciplinary comprehensive tools and tactics, and the next slide really talks about what that can look like. So this is management of the system, so that can be ramp meters or more active transportation management systems. So often there are transportation management centers that exist, so watching what's going on with traffic and responding to it dynamically. We've been putting in fiber along roadways so that we have a kind of data backbone that could support that information. The other thing it can look like is operational changes. So these examples are out there that you've seen at the restriping that we did at 205 and SR 500. So that's an example of that type of a change. The bus on shoulder pilot is also that type of an item, where you're looking to really maximize the utility of the system that you have.
Okay.
And in part, this is really because obviously there is those major projects are legislatively designated, and there are times when that legislative designation doesn't necessarily fit with all the needs in an area. So we're trying to see what we can do without knowing that those major capital improvements are coming. So the 54th 42nd study, I think folks are familiar with the area generally. Obviously, it's an east-west corridor that serves significant through traffic. As we were talking about, somebody here who lives in Hawkinson, and so that through movement is particularly valuable. We also know there are folks that live along that corridor. So the image that is on the next slide really shows the urban nature of the corridor, and that these two signals, so they are two signals in between interchanges. And so that nature is very, it's sort of an interesting challenge, really, of how do you deal with signals in the midst of interchanges. And again, with that traffic that's served. Mm-hmm. So part of the challenge with the study is really trying to figure out how to balance those needs, the interest in local access, along with the fact that there's through movement and that there are not a lot of significant east-west through movement corridors in the Clark, right. in Clark County.
Yeah.
So there's a slide with some pictures of current conditions that's really just showing the congestion that's out there. If you travel 500, you probably are familiar with this. And then after that, you'll see a slide that shows the number of vehicles essentially arriving at 42nd and arriving at 54th. Both along 500 and then at 42nd and 54th. In percentage terms, that's about 12% of folks getting to that intersection on 42nd, and this is PM peak. And then on 54th, 19% of traffic is coming to that on 54th or Stapleton.
How much of these vehicles are going straight or taking a left?
So we have all the turning movement information. There's one, I don't have all of it in my head, but I do know, right. So we are talking with service providers. So we had a meeting with the schools. We were talking about the bus barn and the movements that it has in the morning specifically. So they think they have about 100 folks in the AM peak who are coming out at 54th and taking a left to 500
left.
To go to 5.
Okay.
So that's an example of that,
yeah.
that movement
okay.
and desire. And also at 42nd, I was looking at some of those figures, and in this PM peak, you've got about half of the folks, maybe about 350 folks getting to that intersection during PM peak, and maybe 180 of them are taking that left. So it's trying to figure out how to balance those interests
right.
and the through movement demand.
So buses, if they were to go on the shoulder, would that include school buses?
So, you know, I don't know about the bus and shoulder pilot. I think that's
C-Tran. And it's not on 500.
It's not on 500.
It's on
205
and SR-14,
yeah.
right?
I know, but they're talking about it as a solution.
No.
That's just an example.
Those are examples.
Just examples of the things they've done in other areas.
Yeah. It's just to say, when we're talking about things that aren't interchanges, to give an example of what those things are, because I think folks are very familiar with capital improvements that we do, and that's the common assumption about what we're talking about. So it's just examples. We've seen about 30% increase in traffic on that corridor since 2009, so obviously the corridor is getting more congested.
What percent was that?
30% of increase in traffic since 2009.
Yeah, seems like at least.
Yeah. And also that's, so 2009 would then be, there's the dip, obviously, from the recession, which took a while to come back up, so that's an interesting point of time, mm-hmm. certainly. And again, with this difference in demand, part of the conversation on this project will be discussing the potential to change access. So to potentially talk about whether or not 42nd and 54th allow all the movements that they allow right now, which is a challenging conversation.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
But it's obvious.
It's
You
have to ask the question,
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah.
So the main reason the project ultimately is a safety project, certainly there's congestion there, but what we see and what we've seen over the last 5 years is nearly 400 accidents around the 42nd and 54th intersections. That's really more than one a week, about one every 4 days. And so that gives us the need to try to figure out something to do because we don't have a capital solution programmed, anytime.
Right.
And we have to figure out if there's something we can do to positively influence that situation.
Without doing different on-ramps and off-ramps and changing those intersections?
Those types of improvements typically are at a scale where it would likely be a legislative
capital
designation
budget
project.
Yeah.
Right. And so then it's trying to figure out what would work, what's cost effective, and then what are our opportunities to go after funds. So we have funding for the study, we don't have funding for improvements right now.
It's amazing. So 5 years ago when you had a wreck, I kind of knew where to go, to get around it, the side streets around, the Ford dealer. Now everybody knows,
It's
like, what's
the
deal?
Yeah,
Ford, it's not like
they
that
have to
know.
Anymore. There's a crash every 4 days. You got to figure out how to get around it.
Right, exactly. So the point of the study really is to identify cost-effective strategies to address safety issues through practical solutions, and again, to develop information to support funding requests, very specifically. The other thing then with understanding sort of the challenges we face in doing the study is wanting to talk a little bit about outreach. So we have our outreach goals are on the slide, and our intent really is to make sure that we have a good, robust conversation with the public to try to figure out what's going to work or not work for results from the study. Specifically, what that looks like is three engagement activities. So trying to identify with folks what the problems and needs are. In a second sort of set of engagement activities, of the array of options that we identify, how well those address problems and needs and what impacts are seen. Mm. And finally, then, once there's a proposed set, do they seem like they address the problems, and how well do they minimize impacts or address those concerns we've heard through the process? Mm. These are the outreach audiences, so neighborhoods, business associations, through users, service providers, and agencies. I think one of the most important things really is recognizing with neighborhood outreach, the demographics in this area are unique to the county and to the city. There are higher proportions of folks here who live with disabilities, who are lower income folks, who are renters, who have limited English proficiency. In the city, there are more folks who have households with no vehicles and are commuting by foot or by bus to work. In the county, that's a little bit different. Obviously, there's more need for a vehicle in the county with how the roads are there. So that's not the case in the county side, but those other things are really true, that there are higher proportions. What that means for us is it's typically there are more challenging populations to reach, because the idea of at least our standard, which has often been an open house for any question, but open houses are hard for people to get to. So we're really trying to identify a dynamic set of tools to allow information to come in and to respond to things without expecting folks to always come to an open house.
Have you talked to CTRAN?
We have talked to CTRAN, yeah, about the Vine work that they do.
Yeah, because they learned a lot of lessons, hard ones on that.
Yeah, so yes, that's something, and I think when we worked on St. John's, I think folks anticipated there was a long closure during construction, but that didn't really read or resonate with folks until later in the process, and then we had some lessons learned there, I think, too.
Okay.
So, online and e-list tools, we're trying to find ways to overlap with school activities such that we could be at the schools when there are school events and maybe parents are more likely to be around. And also really trying to find if there are like local gathering spots or other places to place information. So that's something where if you know somebody who might have, CTRAN's a good example, but ideas for how to reach folks in those areas, we're happy to hear them. It's really a point of interest to figure out how best to find folks and to get the information out.
Boys and Girls Clubs are on the fourth plane, like, I think it's called right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a good one. Thank you. So the other things we're doing, we're reaching out to businesses and services. So the Fourth Plain Business Association, the school district, sheriff and fire and police, also the Washington State Patrol. So those are meetings that we're having. And then we're working with agencies. So we have a technical advisory committee that's already started meeting. We have a leadership or executive committee. We are trying to find the right membership to be on that committee, recognizing that the conversations may get a little escalated at times if we start talking about changes in access. So I think that folks have maybe preliminarily identified a person to be on that group, but certainly want to make sure you folks are aware of that, and if there's interest or if it makes sense to have either an elected official or somebody who you folks feel like is a good conduit of information to be on that group, then I would encourage you folks to have that conversation. We're having the first meeting of that group mid-March, and so we're looking to get that on people's calendars soon so that we don't have conflicts as that comes up. Finally, there's just a schedule overview on the last slide. And really the point of that mostly is to say, while I have said a lot about not having funding sources, there is a funding source that is safety related that we think we can make an ask for this summer, so we'd like to do that. The earliest funds through that program would be available right now that we know of is the 2021-23 biennium, so it's several years out. So we're still trying to figure out what makes sense in the interim and trying to make sure we have good information to solicit funds from that source.
The crash reports, that's reported crash reports from local law enforcement or the State Patrol, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's. I think they have a way to aggregate that information.
Because I think there's the total is more because when you don't call somebody, it's not reported. But
yeah, right. Certainly, there are those that are not reported. Absolutely. Yeah.
I would suggest on the reaching out too. There's a lot of apartments in that area, so I don't know whether there's a rental association that the owners of rentals, so that those various apartment complexes maybe could be at least postings for some of the information.
We are also considering doing a mailing out at an appropriate time to have a postcard or something that just says we're talking about this and we want to make sure you know.
It's a huge school hub for sure.
Yes, and absolutely.
That's a good idea for school meetings.
Yeah.
And has the study also done how much capacity Forest Plain would have to take?
So I think that's something we will be doing some traffic modeling, and one thing we'll do is generate volumes out of the travel demand model. So that's something that really is looking at, you know, if you change something on 500, where do those trips go otherwise? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that would have a potential routing to 500 or other places. So we'll be using that tool.
And you know, we have the reverse effect too. For a year or more, Fourth Plain was.
With the construction?
Yes. Yeah. Was very difficult to navigate.
Yeah.
And the east-west route changed from a relatively straightforward Fourth Plain to shifting traffic on the 500 to go east and west. And then people get in that travel habit.
Yes.
Once your habit is established. It would seem that to make it easier to navigate Fourth Plain if that's possible. Mm-hmm. Not at the same speed, of course, but it's a good idea to look at that corridor as well.
Yep, absolutely. I guess the final thing I would note is just that based on the urban nature of the land there, obviously there's a pedestrian bridge at 42nd now.
Right.
For us, we think based on multimodal perspectives that 54th, that pedestrian and bicycle access across the 54th is an essential component to retain. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't have it there, people will probably continue to try to take that movement, which would be unsafe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Sure would.
Something where, so that makes it even slightly more complicated.
Yeah.
So thank you for your
time.
Okay,
thank you.
If you have any ideas, please let us know.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, from traffic to garbage.
I think we're going to try to wait to see if Alan can maybe be here, so maybe do some of these other ones. Kind of stalling.
Very good. The advisory board?
You have a document. It's in a staff report format.
Oh, okay.
It says create a mental health sales tax funding. This is the result of the work session that we had. Mm-hmm. And probably the key to it is on the where it says graph number 2, the advisory board. And
the actual participants, you mean?
Yeah, probably on the second page, under number 8, there'll be 2 county counselors.
Okay.
One countywide, one urban.
One urban.
The rest
that would handle probably Vancouver, the urban one.
The urban.
Yeah.
I'll be the urban.
Urban cowboy. Okay.
The rest was, as was discussed, and this is just touching base to make sure we listen the proper way. And
very good.
It's okay for the agenda.
Yep. Work session?
Work sessions, there were some documents. Also, got a lot of information, but on the Conservation District, April 1 was the deadline, and there have been information gathered, meetings about that, and so this is just scheduling the work session on April 18th or April 25th, where there would be a report given to the council as to the conclusions, both the technical,
how technically
we could collect.
Collect it.
If that was a choice and the cost of that. And then the second is, would there be any logic from a program standpoint?
It's not possible to give that information. I'm just throwing this out. I would do what the other counselors want. But is it possible just to get that information at the hearing rather than schedule another work session? Because as I understand it, we have to have a hearing.
We did have a hearing.
No, we already had one.
Don't we have to have a... Did we not have a... Okay, that's all we need.
Yeah.
So the work session possibly would talk about, you know, if in fact there was beneficial ways to implement it, and secondly, beneficial ways to have this program, then the third would be, well, then what are the steps to bring that about from a... You know, hearing
that. What was the April 1st date?
That was to bring back information on the options.
Oh, I see. That was what we asked them to bring back.
Yeah, we kind of left the door open a little bit, saying, you know, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Possibly, there might be some program reason for using that organization to benefit.
Something we could read.
We will get you the information.
I should whether we need a work session or not.
Is that what you're...
Okay. Yeah. Why don't we get you the report and you can decide from there?
Yeah.
But those are all logical questions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We'll say maybe.
Yeah.
And maybe we can, if we get the report back and we want to talk about it even at 10-15 minutes of board time or something,
right,
or council
time. That's what
okay.
Rather than a work session.
Might be sufficient.
Okay.
I did see Dr. Melnick.
He's here. Dr. Melnick is here.
Oh, yeah. Made it back from the tour.
Okay. We want to do this work session topic first.
Tour.
Good.
Okay. Come on up.
Somebody reserved parking for you so you
That's your answer.
Somebody's standing in a parking spot holding a
special Dr. Melnick cone.
That's right.
Yeah. There's seven copies of
it. Make sure the counselor's
there's enough for everyone.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't have a disease tie on today.
Garbage tie?
Not even a garbage tie.
I mean, it would have been great to show these prospective candidates this and explain that to them.
Okay, take it away.
Yeah, go for it. Good morning, counselors. Chuck Harmon, program manager. I oversee the solid waste enforcement program, which oversees permitted facilities and also closed landfills in the county. And I know we've talked to you in the past about the Circle C landfill. It was a former construction debris landfill just south of the exit up there to the center. And we wanted to give you an update of where we are working through. We came to you, and I've got a timeline here. I'll step through real quickly. So we came to you a year ago in a work session to talk about how we had been looking at criteria.
Uh-huh.
They're under what's called a post-closure permit, just like we were talking about this earlier. Lightner Landfill's under one of those right now. And the family wants to be out of it. It's about a $4,000 to $5,000. Well, right now it's about $4,800 a year permit fee. So we've been looking at guidance that Ecology has established and other regulatory standards for protecting groundwater, protecting surface water, and also other parameters around landfills.
Oh, okay.
So a year ago, we had presented in a work session our overview of what we thought were all the applicable standards that we could come across. Then in April, we did have, through a Board of Health meeting, a public meeting to go over those. The owners and representatives of Circle C were there, had asked and requested that they meet with us to discuss the specifics of what they would be needing to monitor, sample, and some of the standards. So the BOH meeting was in April. Then in June, we were finally able to sit down with them. We also bring Ecology in. Ecology has certain expertise, like a hydrogeologist, that we don't have on staff that we use to help advise us as we're working through this process. Then after, so we met with them in June, went through the table, and a copy of the table, which I'll come to next, is in the packet. And then in August, after all of that meeting and discussion and checking with Ecology, we went to this. It's kind of a lot of material here. This is from August of last summer after we had met, and this updates what had been originally presented. And we sent this back to the Circle C and their representatives. They then they came back and met with us in September, just their legal representative and their consultant in September, and asked, it was a longer list than I've presented in the table here and in the September in this first summary of dates. But they were concerned about, how do you measure metals in groundwater? And the sampling wells they had available to them, and asked if there was a difference, because under the state code for groundwater protection, and the feedback we got from Ecology on metals was what's called total metals, and I'm getting to a little bit of lab work and chemistry, but total metals, which is you take the sample, put it in a bottle, you send it to the lab. Of course, the wells they have available to them are the shallow wells around the landfill. They're in a matrix, they're in a strata that's got some turbidity in it, some particulate. That particulate generally has higher levels because metals and things like that attach to the particulate. They've been doing dissolve, so they're asking, I'm just diving down for sake of example, sorry. They're asking for a different standard. So again, we went back to Ecology, and they asked for a couple of other things around gas measurements, and also around manganese specifically, one of the metals, and finally just what standards will we use to compare in relation to surface water. And so that was in September, and I'm just giving you a timeline of sort of the negotiation process and what we've been talking about, and you can ask questions. So then this was August, and then after we met in September, we got back with Ecology. This last page of the handout is our reply back to them, which was in October, on October 9th, and we really haven't gotten a formal response to this on October 9th. My staff person that does the work in solid waste enforcement, Melissa Sutton, it does about 4 inspections of the landfill a year under the permit, and during that inspection she noticed that they were preparing some things to do gas measurements and to do what's called site stability, where you put out some things that have been marked, you know, the elevations have been marked precisely, yeah. And then over about a year's period, they'll look if it's still stable or if there's a significant shift or not. So they were starting to do some of those things, but we know they're preparing, but we don't know where they are as far as our last October 9th feedback to them around some of these issues around, again, I think the more difficult ones are, how do we want to sample and evaluate metals in groundwater? And I think manganese is a concern. I mean, manganese can tend to be a landfill. It's considered a metal that's indicative of landfill processes because you have, there's no oxygen, and so the bacteria will change the geochemistry to preferentially release manganese and iron, and you'll look at those a lot to look at how is groundwater impacting. And again, we've gotten some relatively high standards of manganese, but there's really not a drinking water concentration for it. It's not considered toxic. But the other thing is Ecology is telling us, well, there's some research that's indicating you want to be concerned about it. But I think we want to get the measurements, and I guess I'll just boil it down on those issues. I think we can go with certain types of measurements for groundwater where we could measure both dissolved, and I mean, this is what we've pitched back to them, is measure both dissolved and the total metals,
okay.
And then look at that data. Because, again, in my background and work I've done evaluating groundwater and groundwater impacts, lots of times the upper level particulate gets filtered out before it ever reaches groundwater. The real tough issue on groundwater here is having deeper wells. When they first put the landfill in, there were deeper wells that were into the drinking water aquifer. Those would be the best piece of evidence to evaluate, has there been an impact? But unfortunately, those wells hadn't been kept up. The health department about 15 or so years ago, had not required them to continue monitoring those. It's very costly to reestablish those. So that's part of also what I recommended, is there a way for us to further evaluate, besides the shallow wells, that may not give us the most accurate data. So that, I think, is a big issue.
So how many metals are we going to ask them to be testing for? How many metals?
It's 12 metals.
Okay. And do you know the cost between what they were doing now versus the additional analysis? Because labs don't do it for free, even though
it's one sample, right.
And they shoot it. That's not for every metal they add on.
I've never costed out what I myself haven't costed out what that would all add up to, and they haven't provided us a cost. I couldn't give you that.
Because I think that was part of the discussion we had before. What is the expense for these guys to manage this? And if at some point it's too expensive, they'll just file for bankruptcy, and we have to do it anyway. So where is that balance between making sure we have the data that we need and not having them bankrupt the whole thing and just walk away?
And I'll just say some of the things that and it's not all written out here, but I think it's addressed. We're certainly open. Like, we go out and get a couple measurements, and we see certain parameters. Like we're asking for a full suite of things, like volatile organic compounds, mm-hmm. petroleum-based compounds, just to be certain that, if we say you're good and we can get out of this permit, that we don't have any lingering issues. But certainly, if we go out and get a measurement, and we're not really seeing anything.
But it's been closed for like 20 years, right? We've been managing. This is the conversation we had before. We've got 20 years worth of data.
But they haven't been measuring all of these parameters over those 20 years. They took some of this data back early when they were on the permit, and then they stopped collecting that. I think the department, because back then even there was financial challenges, said, you don't really have to measure this anymore. At this point, the way we've always approached it, at least I've been trying to approach it, is okay, great. If you want to get out of the permit, from the health department's perspective, we just want to make sure and revisit some of these measurements. But certainly if they did that and we weren't seeing anything right off the bat, and we also had some
data,
okay, we don't have to keep doing this for
several cycles. If they did it for 5 or 10 years and there was nothing, what logic would there be that in the next 10 years there would be something? But, okay. Where are we now then?
So basically, like on October 9th, we provided some feedback on some other questions they had given us based on the August 10th. And I just haven't heard formally. I did see their legal representative. He was at the Better Communications Forum a couple weeks ago. And he said he owed me an email, but I haven't spoken to him and heard back. I'll check back with him this week to see if they want to sit down again or if they've got a different proposal.
So the issue of the deeper wells that you just mentioned a little bit ago, those are on the property as well, but they have been kind of decommissioned. To recommission them, you said it would be fairly costly.
I don't know the specifics of what they have to do, and I want to be clear on term. Like, they haven't been decommissioned.
Okay.
Because decommissioning would mean pulling the whole structure out.
I see.
And eventually they'll have to do that once we're done with those wells. But I think what it is there's an old pump in there. Sometimes if you just let a well sit, you have to do kind of redevelop it. I'm not a licensed hydrogeologist, but you kind of have to pump it a while and develop it. And getting all that reestablished would be pretty costly. What I'm hoping is that there are some other wells nearby. Maybe there's some drinking water wells.
Maybe.
So that's what we offered back to them in this October. Are there some other deeper wells that might give us an indication near the landfill that we really haven't seen impacts? So that's sort of what we're offering.
And I think the bottom line is some of these things haven't been tested for over the years, they're asking for terminating the permit. So at least testing, I know there's 12 metal samples there, but there's a lot of unknowns. Mm-hmm. So testing them at least once or a few times to make sure it's okay before it's terminated. I mean, it's not going to be a long-term thing, but I think the concern is there's a lot of unknowns with this landfill because they haven't been doing all the testing over time. If that makes sense.
The testing is expensive, and then there is the lingering, what else can be done with that land? But are we asking for any testing that's not required by the state?
All of the testing, we started out by looking at the kind of the, what's called the full list of mm-hmm. groundwater protection criteria. We've sure. stepped back from that a little bit. I think the list that we came up with them was took some things off the table which we're not really concerned about.
Okay.
I think if we got some of this data and it indicated something that we weren't expecting, we might expand. Sure. But and I'm really not, but I from the health department's perspective, I think we want to have the data so we can say quantitatively that it is in fact fine.
But we're not asking for more than what the state would.
No, yeah. We're not asking for more, right.
Point. We're not asking for more, actually somewhat less.
That was the question, is okay. what is the proportion of what we're asking for? So the end goal here.
Yeah, because that'll hit the neighborhood.
The end goal here is to protect what, the aquifer?
Yes.
I see.
And surface waters.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, right. Yes.
Also runoff, but yes, the aquifer. And there is some unknowns here. That's why we're feeling post-termination. If they want to terminate it, we need to at least find out. I'm hopeful that it's all wonderful stuff and there's nothing bad going in there.
How many tests? How under what time span are you asking for these final tests? Do they have to be repeated several times? Or?
Well, I'll say generally, our original proposal is over a year, and again, as we get measurements, like for example, for the stability, the guidance is you measure it like now, like if they go out tomorrow and they get it all surveyed in and they measure and then they come out, you kind of wait about a year is the guidance, see if you see any difference, and then if it was no difference or minimal difference below the standards outline, that'd be done. Similar for gas, and the other thing, like an example of where we worked with them, they were asking, they really asked for kind of 8 gas samples and over, I better read my notes to make sure I'm saying, getting the numbers right, sampling events, and spaced out to some degree, but they said, can we do that without doing it over a year? And we said, sure. And what we found out was they could do 8 sampling events. We'd want them to be spaced out a little bit, and it'd be preferential to do it in March. Because historically, that's when we've seen the highest levels of gas in the old data. To kind of focus it over a short period that elapsed over March. So that's an example of that. Mm-hmm. And then I think if we got a couple of, you always try to look at seasonality around groundwater. If we got a couple of measurements and sampling in a couple of different seasons. So again, nominally a year, as long as all the data looks good.
Wet for the metals, wet season mm-hmm. and dry season. And if there's nothing there, then we're done. And mm-hmm. if do I have that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And we can move forward in this, and we could all be comfortable that there's nothing threatening the aquifer at all. There's just a lot of unknowns with this landfill yet.
And I know you guys are trying to work with them, so I know.
Yeah, it's that balancing act. The only thing I just want to mention is the leachate's a tricky thing also, because what we're seeing is the leachate isn't clean. Some of the sampling they've done recently for where you could just, and it's tricky because the leachate system is collecting waters inside the landfill. And there's also a condensate system that was part of the gas system that would also, water would condensate into those, and that was piped into the leachate. The other thing is we see seasonality in the leachate, which indicates, I don't know if it's water infiltrating or if it's water coming up through groundwater. You see a higher flow rate of leachate. So the question then is, what do you do with that water? And if we sample it all and it's clean, then maybe you just have an outlet pipe somewhere that allows that water to go out.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not clean, then like one of the things they looked into was maybe they could get a National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit, an NPDES permit, but those are really expensive. Those are more expensive than our permit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a tricky, I don't think they've fully resolved that. I don't know exactly where they are on that.
Where would it be discharged to?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, that would be a question. Like once it's clean, that we'd have to answer that. The landfill itself is almost kind of built in a ravine. And you can't really see it from the road, but it's just not too far off the road. And it's about an 80-acre footprint. And then there's a road. In fact, when they constructed it at some point, they put in what's called the under drain. And this is almost like a tile drain in a sense, a pipe that goes along one edge of this, what I'm calling a ravine. And to let water bypass the landfill,
Wow.
And so it's a really complicated setting also. But basically then there are a couple of like little streams, and there's a little collection well at the very bottom. And then I think another 100 yards or so down is what's called is McCormick Creek, which flows south-north and makes its way up to, I think, Lewis River eventually.
One of the other ways we wanted to try to help out here was Ecology wanted us to test for total metals, which would, and Chuck, get me if I'm wrong on this, would actually, if there were suspended particles or
yeah.
or soil or, I mean, yeah. it's going to make the level be much higher than what would actually be threatening the aquifer. So we can find some way to test filtered samples or test deeper. We're less likely to get a positive test, and that will benefit the family. So we're looking at ways to help out there as well. Because if you just test the soil, you know, the ground, you're going to get high levels. That doesn't necessarily mean that the aquifer is threatened. So we're trying to bend over backwards and do that and find a way to do that as well, even though
yeah.
Ecology wants the total metals. So
yeah.
we are trying.
One of the other surrogates, I mean, that's kind of a term I'm using, a surrogate measure that they've also proposed to do is, again, it's like I said, it's a ravine and there's the landfill and then it kind of slopes eastwardly. They propose doing some test pits because, you know, one of their other claims or defenses is there's a fairly clay, silty layer below the landfill. So anything in the landfill would probably not preferentially go down. Generally, that's not how groundwater flows anyway. And that we would do some small test pits, one to verify that, but also in that process, if we saw that there was shallow groundwater, they could put in a small test well, piezometer, and collect water from there and get that water. So we are trying to look for surrogate measures that give us that confidence, like Dr. Mullen was saying.
Very good.
Thank you. Okay.
So the last thing was again, I just want to get you thinking about this or whatever. So once we come to terms, I know we had the meeting last year. Once we have come to terms and say, okay, here's what we've agreed to, we're going to go forth. I guess, would you like a meeting at a work session? How would the council like to know where we're at?
Board of Health.
Next update.
Yeah.
Board of Health.
Yeah.
Board of Health.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to know that too, so we could also inform the owners of what the process would
yeah.
be, so
okay.
they're familiar,
okay.
aware of it also. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good job. The vacant buildable lands model work mm-hmm. session coming mm-hmm. up.
This was discussed in December at the work session, So there's a suggested April 11th.
Okay.
Is that time for that?
Okay. There's a lot of people interested in that work session.
Yeah. I'd have to have it before we get lots of chairs.
Yeah.
Could we make sure that we let the cities know about this and invite them to send people if this impacts them as well?
Okay.
Yeah. Very good. Is Bird just want to bug us today?
He does not.
He doesn't?
He does not. But I have a short update.
Hate the inconvenience.
I asked him if he wanted to do an update.
We've already talked about that.
He said no.
Okay.
But if you want a quick update, I can give you an update.
Okay. Task force commissions. Moving on to counselors.
Oh, sorry, on the RTC had some interesting data on congestion. There was a presentation. Might be worth for if you're interested, the counselor, person, chair.
Say that again. I'm sorry. I apologize.
There was a presentation at RTC on congestion in the county, and had some really interesting data on kind of. What are the worst intersections and what are the impacts? I found it kind of interesting. So it might be worth, if you're interested, tracking down that report.
PowerPoint?
Yeah, it is PowerPoint.
Okay. Very good. I think in front of you, as far as councilor reports, this is from Housley. This goes back many, many, many years ago to the 137th extension from 99th Street to eventually Grace, that went on, came off of the Atlas for some reason. And now to get TIF credits, the developer wants to have this on the, put this back on the Atlas, or on the Capital Facilities District Plan, so there it's eligible for TIF credits. And I think, as probably most of you know, this, they give us a park project, and there's
Mark,
all
gonna,
kinds of things.
Sorry, I'm going to recuse myself from this part of it just because of a connection I have with Polish.
Okay.
That has changed as we last talked about this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good.
Is there any, so...
There will be an executive session. Are you going to be in your office?
I'll be in my office. Yeah.
Okay.
So, okay. So, essentially, they want, they're asking for, I would think, us to put it on the docket to put this on Capital Facilities, wouldn't you? So.
Yeah, and there's, and he, I met with them last week, and I just asked him to kind of recap this timeline, which is what you have in front of you. You don't have to read it all right now, but just to give you some context of what they've been doing over the last number of years on this project. And then if you remember last year, we also approved a park purchase, just under six acres. If you remember, the appraisal was for this whole piece of property, and then they subtracted what the property would be worth without the park in it, because we had park impact fees that were getting ready to expire. So in this map that you have, this section right here is the park property that they sold us. Yeah.
And then we moved a road around it or something also, didn't we?
Yeah. And then the other thing they were talking about is, so this is the section they want back on the Capital Facilities Plan.
Okay.
Yeah. And then this part, they're ready to give us this right-of-way immediately. So there's just, and we don't have to decide now, I think, but I wanted to at least have Mark, you guys have the information in front of you so we can figure out what the next step would be.
Yeah. Okay.
So, what is this?
What?
What is
so
this?
So what we're trying to do is trying to get this on the docket item to put it on the Capital Facilities Plan.
This being
what?
The 137th and 99th Street. So it will probably be a docket request.
To construct this road?
No, to put this on the Capital Facilities Plan. So then when they pay TIF fees, it's eligible for that road.
Okay.
So because if it isn't, then they have to buy this road, plus they're giving us this road, plus they worked on this part. So, there's
so
not much blood left
put,
in the, you know.
Yeah. The Turner?
This road on the Capital Facilities Plan.
Right.
Correct. So they're eligible for TIF to work for that road.
So what was, surely we had a plan for how 137th would connect through.
Right.
Off Northeast 132nd. What was our original plan?
I think originally it went from 132nd to 133rd or something like that, up to Grace. It's kind of the back way to Battleground, originally. That was when Legler's first came in, I think, because that was kind of the thought of getting to Legler's property on this thing, but that went away, so.
So did we dedicate a right-of-way, or?
No, we didn't do anything.
It was just the arterial atlas,
yep.
That you know?
I think it was, and it came off or something, yeah.
Oh, okay, so it would need to be put
so we
back
have to put
on
it back on the
well.
Atlas?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Do you want a copy of this?
What's that?
I don't know, really.
I mean, I'm predicting that I'll talk to staff and they will go, well, you know, we, like every other week, we get something added to the docket and we don't have the capacity to do everything. So I've heard this from them that everything you add, something else has to come off. So there may be a discussion about.
I guess I have a question about why that would be.
It's just a workload issue.
and some of them, I think, like this, there's not that much study.
And maybe there's little work, so it wouldn't be a big impact. I think they're just cautious about, I think they've learned the lesson hard in the past where they're like, okay, you will kind of figure it out. And then they're like, we just don't have enough staff to do all the steps to do these things. Right. And then things aren't done at the quality and the thoroughness that it needs to be. So.
Well, some of that is, it's always been, we've never gotten this figured out. So the docket item is set by the planning, planning department. And they've never come and say,
shall we put this on?
When they're starting,
they have.
2 months ago. Yeah. Is there any ideas you have? I've never been asked for an idea.
So we should do that.
Yeah.
There should be a work session on docket prioritization,
discussion.
Yeah.
Workload. Because you may have, these are our highest priorities.
Right.
And they take this tiny amount of time.
Right, yeah.
And there may be something that's not a priority that takes a gigantic amount of time that could be.
Right.
So docket priorities, work session?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And on this issue, the information isn't complete. How is this land zoned?
This is a residential project.
Is this entire piece?
I think it is.
It's a residential.
Yeah, a different variety of lot sizes from small to larger. It's a pretty big project. I think it's 200.
Is it low density residential?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a little bit of each, actually.
Whatever our original transportation plan is, I'm a little concerned that this comes up and we're changing the arterial atlas.
So I think this road's on the atlas. They want it on the capital facilities plan.
Capital facilities plan, yeah.
So this deviation off 137 is on the atlas.
I believe so. Yeah. They're asking that it go on the capital facilities plan. Yeah, so I think also he's working with Taylor. They're working with Taylor on a development agreement. So there's a lot of moving parts. I didn't want to solve anything today.
And Taylor's in a hearing.
That's fine. Okay. Yeah. He knows.
But if we wanted to have a follow-up conversation next week, maybe.
Yeah.
I'll let Taylor know.
Okay. We'll handle it.
Do we have council time on Wednesday next week?
Oh, yeah.
Monday's
a holiday.
No, we don't have council because it's state of the county.
That's right.
So we're skipping it next week.
Two weeks.
Okay.
So are we sticking with Mondays?
That's a good question.
Oh, do we want to go get Councilor Baum?
Yes.
I thought we did Mondays temporarily so that Marv, you could attend WASAC.
No, it wasn't for that. It was actually to kind of put meetings together so our week is not extended out.
I understand that, but I never heard that conversation
We did.
The retreat.
Oh, was it the retreat?
Well, we talked about the possibilities of grouping the time, but.
This was kind of a.
We're going to do two trials and then decide.
And then decide.
Because next week we won't have it, so two trials and then see how that goes.
So we wouldn't have it if it was on Monday, and we wouldn't have it if it was on Wednesday, since Monday's a holiday, and Wednesday's the state of the county.
Yeah, so regardless of that, we're not having it next week.
Right, at all. But,
Councilor Blum, we're talking about the day of the week of council time.
It makes Mondays really jammed.
It does.
Yeah.
I wonder if it could be moved earlier on Wednesday.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Could we do it even at
10.
1 o'clock?
Or work sessions.
We have work sessions on Wednesday.
From a staff prep, I mean, this is a bit more me because I'm not here on Fridays. To have everything all ready to
for
go
Monday.
On Monday,
it's,
Fridays.
It is.
It's
hard.
When I come in Monday morning, the last two, I've like, don't.
Whoa.
I don't, yeah. That's a good description. Whoa.
Yes.
I probably don't. I'm not as confident as on a Wednesday afternoon.
So does Wednesday with a lunch at noon.
Oh.
What's wrong with that? I mean,
we can bring our own lunch.
We can bring our
lunch. What's wrong with that?
Oh, with lunch?
Well, yeah. We bring our we'd start at noon.
Yeah.
We'd,
well, that's okay.
You know,
this is a legislative environment.
Take it at 11. Take lunch at 11.
Okay.
Right after work sessions. I don't know.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, that. And then we could free up Wednesday after, you know.
If there's understanding, you could bring in a brown bag. And
right.
Sure. And brown bag it.
Yeah.
We can't
talk
say brown
over
bag.
Lunch.
We can't say
working
brown
lunch.
Bag anymore.
You want to do
right.
a trial? You want to do a trial on that, or do you want to just
yeah.
say?
Why not?
Yeah. So
let's try that.
11:30. 11. What did we say? What time did we say?
Well, work sessions yeah. might go till noon.
Having lunch on Wednesday to get okay.
on
having
Wednesday.
A working lunch.
What about 12:30?
On Wednesday?
What about what?
12:30.
Is that your legal advice?
I'm a little concerned about we public tell staff that they have an hour lunch break. That's county policy from
mm-hmm.
12 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
But for most departments,
really?
Yes.
Really? Yeah,
yes.
They can't flex
can't
it?
Flex
they
away?
Can flex it. You just
I mean, the
get,
people that are in here are...
It's probably going to be exempt.
Are exempt.
So it's probably fine.
That's,
you don't have lunch with us? It's like we're the funnest people in
the... I just know sometimes the planners come and they're in a
yeah.
union and...
If they can flex that one day...
They can.
In a 2 to 3 month period of time.
And maybe they can come later in the meeting.
And 12:30
right.
would
yeah.
be okay too.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
then if we
fine.
Wanted to just
yeah,
eat our own,
there's a little,
if we wanted to have a, our
right.
own kind of, you know...
Little thing. Quinn can then yeah. come.
I would just say we prefer Wednesdays anyway because we have to do civil commitments Monday mornings.
Oh, so your staff involved in that.
It
yeah.
rotates,
yeah.
but that's why Taylor's not
okay.
here.
Right, okay.
So Wednesday at 12:30, start at 12:30 at...
Or 12, or what did you want to do?
Well,
12:30.
12:30.
If it's 12:30, we're less likely to.
12:45.
One.
It's your call. It's your call. I'm not. I'm just taking direction. I'm taking direction. Oh, 12:30 is great.
Okay. Yeah. I like
12:30. 12:30. Okay.
Good.
And this is gonna be a trial.
Yes.
Or you want to do it?
Should we do it twice? Like we did
yeah, we'll
this.
Do it twice.
Because the code does have to be changed.
Yeah.
I think
does the code
even,
say 1:30?
I believe
yeah.
the time,
yes.
yeah.
Yes,
so this has, we'll do
a trial
for two times.
And then we got to update the ordinance.
And then we have to be mindful
of... You need a gray code sometime in the week.
There being time to give
exactly.
some kind of a notification to the public because we very rarely ever have anybody come in
correct.
Here.
Yeah.
But... Just the same, if they believe that we're changing and not having it be public notice, they get upset.
Very good. Report for our interviews, maybe a...
I'll go over it again.
Yeah.
In fact, here's something that Kathleen... I'll give this to you later. This is what you, it communicated what you were looking for in a person, and I have a packet, and I'll make a copy of this for you before, well, sometime today I'll give this to you. So this is just a reminder, because you said, well, we're looking for a person with, you know, A, B, and C.
Oh.
So this
yes, yeah.
this is...
A reminder?
A reminder of that.
What we did on that board.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'll give you a copy. I just have one copy here. So
do we get more, do we have more information on these two people? I don't
oh,
have
yes,
any
yeah.
on my desk.
You got
a big book and a
you
flash drive.
Left,
oh, I.
Your book.
I think
he
I put a book on
DC.
Your desk. But I have another
book.
If I'll give you
and
another one.
And
it's
similar
drive
to the
well.
Original
You're
one,
kidding
Mark.
Me.
No.
It's a conspiracy. You don't want me to know anything. I know.
I'll get you another book.
Okay.
So okay, the schedule.
Good enough.
They've
she probably didn't.
They've done their tour. They're on break now.
Oh,
they have lunch.
They're doing.
What I do?
They're doing 12 to 1 with the office staff.
Okay.
1:30 to 3, internal and external panels. On this floor, I think this room and the one of the rooms down
Hearing
the hall.
Room. Yeah.
Training room. 4 o'clock, four to five are the VIPs. We call it VIPs. That's boards and commissions, and I think mayors and managers of all the cities.
Oh, okay.
And a few other folks. And then five to six is general public.
And we're invited to which?
Four to five.
It's on a, is it four to five?
Four to 4 o'clock beyond, as long as you're interested in that. And that's today. Tomorrow, 8:30, elected officials and their deputies. Okay. That was a clarification. Their deputies will be there from 8:30 to 9.
Yeah.
In the hearing room.
Elected. Are we supposed to be there?
I would say yes.
Yeah.
Is an observation.
Elected, yeah. Okay.
Elected, including Peter. I'm sure Peter's invited.
Who?
Peter.
Who is it?
And the judges are invited to that also.
Okay. So the 8:30.
8:30 to 9. And then 9.
Or their deputies.
Yeah.
Or
and.
And. Okay.
And then at 9, all county employees.
And this is in the hearing training.
Okay. Hearing room. Yeah, hearing room. That'll be interesting with all the chairs in there.
They moved the chairs out.
But tomorrow. But tomorrow is the again.
Oh.
Maybe that'd be an interesting hearing if we didn't have the chairs.
I have training room on my calendar.
I have hearing room on my.
Talked about training room.
My notes. So it'll be down there somewhere.
Because we actually have a hearing at 10 a.m.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And then the interviews are at 1 o'clock tomorrow, starting at 1 with Randy.
Yeah, I show the training.
Okay. Then you have an hour and a half?
1 to 2:30.
Do you have the questions?
No, we did not receive questions.
Okay. Yeah, Kathleen prepared some questions.
Okay.
I'll get those for you.
Okay, then we have executive session or deliberation or whatever it's called.
Afterwards.
And, go from there.
And Emily will be in that D session.
Okay.
Okay. A question. Who do you want? Do you want just the council in the interviews, the 1:30, or the 1 to 4?
1 to 4?
Yes.
The interviews with us and the candidates?
Yes, with us, with you.
What do you think? Just the five of us in that? Okay. And then executive session have Jim and
Emily
and the...
Kathleen
and what's his name?
Doug.
Doug wants to be there.
In the executive session?
Yeah.
I'm wondering, should we have an attorney during the interview? Just, I don't know, as a precautionary.
Don't ask questions.
We had a list of questions not to ask.
You can always split up the executive session where you have one with all the extra people, and then you can kick
that's
us
true,
all out.
And then we can deliberate on our own. Mm-hmm. Probably a good idea.
Okay. Then we'll have them cards we can...
Yeah, I'll be responsible, and I'll talk to Doug about, we met this morning about where he was going to be, where I was going to be,
okay.
So I'll work that out with Doug in terms of getting all the input to you.
Very good. Okay, any questions?
It's exciting.
And then next Wednesday at 3 o'clock, since we won't meet, everybody ready for your spot?
I talked to Holly this morning, and she's preparing talking points.
Good.
So we'll have to kind of one-on-one with her.
Yeah, her goal is to have that all done by Friday and get it to you. She'll send it. We'll send an email out because Monday is the holiday.
Yes.
So she
can't be before Friday. Of course, I'll be.
So we'll send it. Watch your email on Friday. We'll send the talking points out.
I don't
out.
Have my calendar. Tuesday we have a hearing. Mm-hmm. Right?
I have it.
Yep. Could we meet kind of right after the hearing in case we,
that's
kind
a good,
group?
That's a good one.
About what we're going to do, where we're going to sit.
Yeah, the next day. How's that?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, there's a good time.
And I have a question back to the the deliberations in the executive session. During that time, is there a discussion about if we should make a determination that one of these candidates is who we want, is there a discussion of the contract then or later?
That goes later.
Oh, right. I can be ready at executive session to at least have.
But so we would have a place to start, but then that would be offered, and then that's
Yes, it would come back. But at least we would have our offer.
A starting place.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Right above minimum wage or something.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah.
We've already publicized that part.
Okay.
It'll be well above.
Okay. Sounds good. Anything else? Councilor reports?
We don't. Wait. Why don't we get a legislative report? Kay.
So the. The last cutoff was fiscal cutoff, and there were three bills that died, so this is just a repetition from the email, but the study of unfunded mandates on local governments, the bill that would increase state funding for indigent defense, and the bill that would increase state funding for reimbursement of election costs, they all passed their respective policy committees.
They passed
the policy committees and died in fiscal.
Oh,
and when the legislature does that, their statement is essentially, we think it's good policy, but we can't pay for it. So that's the statement they made.
But since the policy was paid for it.
Right. Yeah, right.
Exactly.
So that's was that cut off.
That was the policy.
The next cutoff is Wednesday. The bills need to get out of their house of origin. House bills have to get out of the House. Senate bills have to get out of the Senate. Otherwise, they're functionally dead. It would take a pretty significant decision to continue to move those. The exception to that is all of the major fiscal bills, carbon tax, capital gains tax, all of those are wrapped in with the budget, and the discussions keep going as far as the carbon tax issue goes. And WASAC did send a letter to what's called the Five Corners, so it's the leaders of each of the majority and minority parties in the House and Senate, plus the governor's office, saying you're hurting us. The bills that are passing are going to cause fiscal impacts for counties, and the bills that would have helped us just died. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be asking for a meeting with the Five Corners, WASAC will be. Mm-hmm. So that is good. In process, and then we're just waiting for that cutoff on Wednesday.
I think so.
Great. The last sentence, see you in court, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't say it.
And if you look at your property tax bill, we know what that costs.
That'll be interesting tomorrow.
No,
get ready for them.
Yeah,
did you get yours? No, I actually, we've been warned.
We sure
and,
were.
And staff did have a preparation training on the property tax issue, so all of our
well,
folks around here.
By,
oh my gosh.
So when we get constituents coming in, all of us have the information to get back to them.
Okay.
Shocking. That's shocking. Yeah.
Need a raise.
Well,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. See, we're adjourned for two executive sessions.
One potential.
One potential.
One pending.
One pending.
With action after.
With action after. For a total of how long?
20 minutes.
15 minutes. So we'll be done by. We'll be out by 11:30. I'm sure.
For 15 minutes, both combined, 15 minutes, for 15 minutes.
All right.
We're adjourned.
We are in executive session.
We ready? We're back in session? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve settlement in the Clark County versus Thorpe Goldson matter and authorize the interim county manager to execute the settlement agreement and release.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carried. That it. We are adjourned.